Hey, guys, it's another Sunday night, so you know it's time for another episode of the Brain Love Podcast. This is your host, Dr. Delvina Thomas, a board certified psychiatrist in South Florida. And April is Alcohol Awareness Month. We know that folks, especially during the pandemic, a lot of people overindulged in substances. Alcohol was a main substance. And of course, at times when people overindulge in alcohol, they also use other substances, things like tobacco and nicotine, as well as recreational drugs. On the couch tonight, I have Christina. Hey, Christina.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you for asking, and thank you for being here on the couch. We are talking about substance use disorders. And of course, you know, I reached out to you because I know you from childhood. I know you from
Yes.
elementary school, junior high school, high school, and we follow one another on social media. And a couple of times you have posted about your sobriety. So congratulations on achieving sobriety.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
How many years
It's been a
sober?
journey. I have 2.5 years sober. I'm coming up on 3 in October. It'll be 3 years in October.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
So, folks,
And
Christina is in her 40s. And so I know oftentimes people feel like they cannot achieve getting sober, they can't maintain it. And I always remind people if you fall off the wagon, you fall off the horse, you have to show yourself some grace and forgive yourself so you can start all over again. What do you think about that?
You do because the world's not perfect. We're not perfect. We're human. And I believe as long as you have the desire and the willingness to keep trying, you'll get it. It does get better. Sobriety, you have to deal with life on life's terms. And it can be hard and stressful, but there's a way to do it without drinking and using other substances to cover up trauma and pain and emotions, because emotions are fleeting. They come and go. Trauma can be healed from. We're all taught that when we come into sobriety, because it doesn't matter what we use. It was always about we all had the same feelings of desperation and loneliness and feeling like we were the only ones and we could never get it back together. And we just empower and strengthen, and we share our experiences and our strengths and our hopes. And hopefully, somebody takes what they need and puts them back on the right track.
Yeah, well said. I like that. What are you in recovery from?
Alcohol.
Okay. So you had an alcohol addiction or were abusing alcohol. How many years did you do that?
Well, growing up and through my adult life, I was always a social drinker. And I was always one that I could always drink a little bit more than everybody else, but I was able to rope it in and say, okay, we drank over the weekend and I got to get up and go to work on Monday. I became a single mom in 2008 when I got divorced, and raising 4 kids, I had to take care of them. And so I was always a social drinker. Like, I always felt like, oh, that was mom's break. Let's go out on the weekend and drink a little bit and then go back to the normal Monday through Friday type situation. It really didn't happen overboard until 2020. And 2020 was not because of COVID. I know you said that COVID set a lot of people into that path, and it did. And a lot of people relapsed, or a lot of people picked up for the first time during COVID because of the isolation and things like that. Mine was from, I had lost my fiance of a massive heart attack out of the blue one day. And I couldn't cope. And it was just a drink to settle down. It was a drink here and there. And then it just got so normal, and just covering those feelings and not dealing with the grief and not dealing with, didn't care what happened next because my life fell apart. I did that for about a year. And then I went into treatment in November of 2021, a year later, realizing that something was broken. I didn't know, and I had to fix something because this was not me, and I needed to learn how to be me again.
What were some of
And
the signs or the indications that, okay, this isn't my usual drinking. This is something different.
it was so the signs were nobody really wanted to be around me. I thought I was hiding it. Everybody knew, but nobody spoke on it, you know. And then it got to the point where it was just overwhelming for people to want to be around me. I would find myself in my room by myself, drinking myself, going to the liquor store at 7:45 in the morning, waiting for them to open at 8, starting to shake to make sure, you know, I could hurry up and get my first drink so I didn't shake. It got really bad really quickly. And I think towards the end, it didn't even matter anymore why or what I was using. It was kind of like I just felt like something's not right. And I didn't care if I woke up or didn't wake up one day. And I went to sleep and woke up 2 days later and ended up in the hospital. And that's when I realized, hey, maybe I need help. Talking to peer counselors, psychiatrists, and doctors, and they're like, something else is wrong. We don't see this just happen. And there was a lot of mental health that went component with it that I didn't even know I had until I opened up to be, hey, I need help.
So when you started processing and talking to people, that's when you realized that maybe there were some underlying issues that you may have been self-medicating at some point.
Yes. There's definitely underlying issues. I don't have a traumatic background, but I didn't live through trauma. I didn't grow up in trauma or turmoil. It stemmed from just little things built up over the years that I always pushed aside that I didn't think was traumatic in the sense of most people go to war. You have firefighters, you have police, you know, you have those in those kind of jobs who see traumatic events happen. I never lived through that. So just little stuff that I seen didn't realize that those probably were always there. And that one thing with my fiance dying set me over the edge. That was the break. And yeah, that's where I found myself.
So when your drinking habits started to change, you mentioned that you were solo drinking, basically drinking by yourself. Did you notice that you were drinking more in quantity?
Yes, definitely more in quantity because I could never feel I could always still feel an emotion coming on. So instead of crying or yelling and screaming or actually feeling that emotion, I would drink more to numb it. So anytime I felt anything happy, sad, you know, angry, you know, hurting, my body was tired, I was sleepy, anything that I could not have to feel, I added more alcohol to it.
Wow, so you were trying to numb away those emotions. So you just what were you trying to achieve? A feeling of what?
I don't think I was trying to achieve a fulfilling of anything. I just didn't want to feel anything because I didn't know if I could handle feeling anything. I didn't trust myself to feel anything. I didn't trust myself to work through these emotions because I'm like, okay, he's been gone for 4 or 5 months. I should be better. And I put a lot on, I should have, could have, would have. And I didn't want to think like that. And I was
Yeah.
scared. It was a lot of fear.
So how did you make the move from over using alcohol, knowing you had an alcohol problem? And listeners, I'll just say a lot of people are considered high functioning alcoholics. In a moment, I'll give you the signs of alcohol use, overusing alcohol. These signs may indicate that you have a problem with alcohol consumption. A lot of people are high functioning alcoholics. How did you make the move? Because in AA, we talk about, or not just in AA, but really with any type of substance use disorder, we talk about the process leading up to starting sobriety. And in the beginning, there's a lot of pre-contemplation. How did you force yourself forward? How did you move yourself forward?
I think that when I went to sleep and I woke up 2 days later, ended up in the hospital talking to everybody. I just had a moment of awakening talking to a peer who said, I've been through this. I'm in recovery. When I had never spoke to anybody else I knew in recovery, it was a complete stranger who came to me and gave me his story. And I pulled from that. But a part of me also knew or thought that, Christina, this isn't you. Snap out of it. You're stronger than that. You shouldn't be this person. This was not you. And now I have to put one foot in front of the other to prove everybody wrong. I think that that was my main goal at the beginning, was just to prove to everybody that I could stop drinking. It wasn't even because I wanted to, I guess you could say. It was to prove everybody wrong. And then when I went into treatment, I started to realize this isn't about proving anything to anybody. This is about taking care of me and becoming a little bit more selfish. My children were grown at the time. So it wasn't like I had little ones depending on me. I was by myself, and all I had to do was work on myself. So I railed in and started to actually participate in the programs and the meetings and listening to other people who had come before me. And felt like, wow, I am not alone. This is not just something I'm going through. This is a worldwide thing. You know, people from all different social networks, social classes, races, religions, all of that. And I felt a part of something that made me feel like, hey, I can do better.
So, did anyone confront you about your drinking? Did anyone come to you and say, "Hey, you're drinking so much, we don't know who you are. You have to stop. You need to get help." Did that ever happen?
It didn't per se. It was more like, yeah, you can't live with me because, you know, you're drinking a little too much. You need to figure this out on your own. It was more like tough love situation. It wasn't, you need to go get help. Something's wrong. It was never pointing fingers. It was, yeah, we're going to deal with you, but at a long-handled spoon because you need to figure out what's going on. But never a confrontation with anyone to say, Christina, you need treatment. You need to stop drinking. You need to do this. It was never ultimatums and confrontation for me.
So once you achieve sobriety, was it hard to maintain? Were you craving alcohol?
Actually, no. I didn't crave alcohol. You would think that I did, but I started to fill myself with. I did the first year of my sobriety while I was in treatment, and then I lived in a recovery house, and I became the house manager for a house full of 13 other women that I was in charge of and overseeing. I worked through therapy and got to the core of where that all stemmed from and the different things that led up to my drinking and what pushed me over the edge to drinking and where I didn't know how to stop. I worked through a lot of that and the craving, because I realized where it stemmed from, the cravings never came. I know a lot of people will say, I still get cravings, or I have to be on a maintenance medication for this or maintenance medication for that because I crave. I didn't have that same feeling. It just wasn't in the cards with me. I'm a very intellectual person, so I think the black and white of it, to get down to the root of it and learn it and be taught, and I think it realized that, hey, I can do better. You know?
Well, we
And
certainly applaud you because it is a very difficult thing to overcome. Did you relapse ever
I
during your
have me.
journey?
I have not relapsed in 2.5 years.
Wow, that's awesome.
I am completely 100% abstinent. I do not take mental health medication. I don't take maintenance medication. I do not take, and I'm not doubting anybody that does, because I am a peer counselor, so I mentor other people and I sponsor, and so I have come to the realization everybody has their own pathway to sobriety. My pathway has been abstinence. And talking about it, sharing at meetings and speaking on my experience, strength, and hope, and things like that have fulfilled me to where I'm able to maintain and balance.
What would you say to someone who's contemplating getting clean, getting sober, undergoing detox? And by the way, folks, we really didn't talk much about that part of it, but if you're overusing or have been abusing alcohol, you cannot stop drinking cold turkey. You cannot do that. You heard Christina mention that there were times when she would have the shakes, so she would drink in the morning. Or drink to prevent herself from feeling that discomfort or getting the shakes. That is actually some of what people experience when they start to have alcohol withdrawal. And that's what really leads to people constantly drinking is because they don't want to feel uncomfortable. So if you overuse or abuse alcohol and you want to stop, please get into a detox program. Go to detox so you can be medically detoxed off of the alcohol. Christina, did you go to detox?
I did not. My drinking had come to the point of I never actually sobered up. My blood alcohol level always stayed super high. So when I had my last drink on October 23rd, so I count my clean date as October 24th because that's the first day I didn't have a drink. I went to sleep on the 23rd. I woke up on the 25th. When I went into the hospital on the 25th, my blood alcohol was still 0.18. I still had enough alcohol in my system that it didn't send me. Going into the hospital, I felt like I was going through withdrawal, but I wasn't. My blood alcohol was just lower than what it usually was because I drank so much. So they hurried up and they flushed my system and gave me minerals and vitamins and things like that to get the alcohol out of my system without going through the withdrawal symptoms. That's why I was there for a week before I went to treatment. They had to balance out everything in my body first. So I
But
didn't technically go through a withdrawal.
that's detox. If you were
Well,
admitted to the hospital for 7 days and they gave you IV fluids and they gave you banana bags, that's detox. And I'm sure they were probably giving you lorazepam, which is Ativan, or something called Valium, or something called Librium to keep you comfortable in that IV.
Well,
And
actually, what I do have my IV, my records, because when I went into detox, that usually stays in your system. And when I had to take a UA for treatment, when I went into the 28-day program, it wasn't in my system because they did not give me that. They gave me two blood transfusions and fluids. They didn't have to give me the Ativan and the Valium and things like that because I wasn't in withdrawal yet because I still had alcohol in my system. So I wasn't technically being a detox because I still had so much alcohol in my system. They just needed to flush my system and replenish everything to ease it so I wouldn't go into a withdrawal type situation when somebody tries to quit drinking cold turkey. So I never did take Ativan. I'm actually allergic to Ativan, so they didn't give me that. And I didn't have Valium or none of that. It was just a lot of, I had two blood transfusions and lots of fluids and potassium, all of that stuff. That's what they gave me in the hospital.
Yeah, I want to tease it out clinically though for the listeners because I don't want anyone to
Okay.
get confused.
Okay.
You went into the hospital for 7 days, so I'm sure they admitted you on a detox protocol, which is where the potassium, the vitamins, and all those things came in. When someone is admitted for detox, the protocol, you monitor them and you watch them, and if they reach a certain score, you can dose them the Ativan, the Valium, or the Librium, or whatever it is you're giving them to prevent or to treat the withdrawal symptoms. So, if you weren't getting those things, you weren't getting, not if you were not receiving those things, but you receive what we call the supportive supplemental care, the IV
Yes.
fluids, the vitamins, the supplements, and you had a blood transfusion, so you must have had a really low blood count
Yes.
to, okay.
Because of
Were
the
you,
alcohol, yes.
did you have internal bleeding in your belly, in your gut?
I did not. They just said my iron and my red and white blood cell count were so low, depleted from the alcohol. I was dehydrated, and alcohol was in gets into every organ of your body. So you're not balance. But you're right. I've since I work in treatment, I've been through treatment and I've worked at women's houses and programs and ran houses. I have seen women that had to go to the hospital and do the actual detox protocol from alcohol because it causes seizures and it can shut your organs down and you can die from alcohol withdrawal. I hadn't got to that level yet. That's why those other protocols didn't happen with me. That's just me personally. There's a whole lot of different steps to people when they come off of alcohol. But me personally, that's all I can speak on is how they did it with me. And that's what happened.
The learning lesson here is that you were in the hospital and you were being cared for by a medical team. So,
Yes.
guys listening, that's the important part of this conversation regarding the stopping the drinking. When you experience symptoms, or if you've been drinking every day, and sometimes people try to equate withdrawal to the amount of time that they consume alcohol. So meaning, oh, I've only been drinking a year, so I won't go into withdrawal, or I only drank for 2 years. It really is not, it's not a direct correlation like that. So you could have overconsumed alcohol for 10 years, and your withdrawal process may not be as difficult as the person who drank for only 2 years. So the person who drank for 1 or 2 years may have a harder time than the person who drank for 10 years. So don't look at it that way. There's not a direct correlation between the amount of time or the length of time that you consumed alcohol to your experience when you're detoxing or coming off of the alcohol. The main point here is to seek help, and that's medical help, because alcohol withdrawal is a medical issue, and you can die from it. As you heard Christina say, it can kill you. You don't want to experience having an alcohol withdrawal seizure and hit your head, or something, something extreme happens. Or even without the seizure, you could die from alcohol withdrawal. So just please seek medical care. There are facilities which provide just alcohol detox, and all hospitals can do alcohol detox. You would just go to the emergency room and say, "Hey, I've been drinking for a very long time," or, "I've been drinking every day for this amount of time, and I stop and I notice that I'm experiencing symptoms." Sometimes people get sweaty or diaphoretic. Some people get the tremors or shakes. Some people are dizzy. Some people notice that the heart is beating fast. And if you're someone who checks your blood pressure at home, you might notice that your blood pressure is elevated. And if the more severe forms of withdrawal, sometimes people hallucinate. They see things or hear things that aren't really there. So, Christina, what would you say, going back to that, to encourage people to at least go and get an assessment to determine if they have a problem with alcohol? Because some people say, I don't have a problem. I can quit when I want to."
It saved my life. It's an assessment is gonna only help you. It's not gonna hinder you. It's not gonna cause you any more pain or trauma that you're already going through. It can only help. You have options. That's not one way or no way. There's plenty of options out there. You just have to be willing to take that step to say, hey, I need help. And we always say in NA and AA and my 12-step meetings and programs is keep coming back. Keep coming back. You not everybody gets it the first time around, and you maybe don't get it 10 times around, but keep coming back. We're here. That's what this is for. That's what these programs are for. This is what these treatments are for. This is what the hospitals are for. Just reach out. You could be saving your life as well as your family's life, because it's killing them just as much as it's killing you, even though they may not be using.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, guys, just know that every alcohol use disorder is not a severe disorder. There are ranges in severity. So, you may overuse or overconsume, and you may be considered mild. So, in the field of psychiatry, as well as in other fields of medical care, at times we'll rate someone's disorder as mild, moderate, or severe. You can have a disorder and not fit the stereotype of someone who's drunk falling down in the street. So oftentimes people believe that an alcoholic is someone who looks disheveled, they're not functioning, they don't go to work. But quite Actually, on the contrary, a lot of alcoholics are high functioning alcoholics. So, some of the signs you may want to look out for, and helping you to determine if you have an issue with alcohol, as Christina mentioned, this increased tolerance. That means it takes more alcohol for you to get the same effect that you once did when you began drinking. You may notice that in the beginning, you'd have a beer or a glass of wine or a cocktail, and you would feel kind of like, oh, I'm feeling this. So you would feel a little inebriated or a different sensation. But over time, if you're drinking every day, you may notice that it takes two glasses of wine. And actually, for some people, they'll consume a whole bottle of wine before you notice an effect. That is a sign that you have a problem that's called tolerance. If you have a hard time stopping your drinking once you start, that too is a sign you have trouble stopping. So let's say you go to your sister's house and you guys are, having drinks and having a nice chat or conversation, and your sister has stopped drinking, but you continue to drink. You keep going and going and going. You're having a hard time stopping. So that could be an indication. When you spend your time thinking about drinking alcohol, that is an indication that you have a problem. If you drink alone, you heard Christina mention that it got to a point where she was just drinking alone. People who overconsume in the privacy of their home, or they go into the bedroom, or they hide alcohol around the house, that indicates there is a problem. When you wake up, if you feel like you have to have a drink, we call that an eye opener. That is a great indication that you have a problem with alcohol. If you notice that you have dysfunction in your relationships, whether it's relationships on the job with your significant others, your loved ones, you're getting to more arguments when you drink, that is an indication that you have a problem with alcohol. Not being as productive as you once were, you have been neglecting things because drinking takes priority. You may have missed work because you're drinking. That is a sign of an alcohol use disorder. And what we mentioned, withdrawal symptoms, being shaky, feeling nauseated, being sweaty, that is a sign that you abuse alcohol and you have an alcohol use disorder. And lastly, if you are more promiscuous when you drink or have driven a car after drinking, those are considered dangerous behaviors. If you do that, that means you have thrown caution to the wind and you are engaging in these risky, dangerous behaviors. That is a clear indication that you have an alcohol use disorder. But please go and see someone. Your primary care doctor can do an assessment, as well as going to a psychiatrist or a psychologist. They too can assess you and determine if you have, it used to be called alcohol abuse or alcohol dependence. Now we say alcohol use disorder and we'll rate it. So if you're using alcohol to get to sleep, to quell your anxiety or your nervousness, to deal with family members, please, this too is a red flag that alcohol has become a vice for you, and you should go and see someone so you can learn other healthy ways to cope. Christina, do you want to add anything before I give folks information on where to find help?
No, just say whatever information you give for them to find help is to just reach out. We don't judge, we don't, discriminate, and you're gonna meet people you never thought you needed in your life. Just reach out. I mean, you could save your life at this point. All you have to do is ask for it. Just ask for help.
Yes, and by going to your primary care, they too can give you a list of resources. The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services has a national helpline, 1-800-662-HELP, as in HELP. That's 1-800-662-HELP, which is 4357. You can also Google Alcoholics Anonymous. Some people want to start with that. They want to start with a support group. Also, there is a treatment navigator. You can go on this treatment navigator and find resources. And you'll see this information also in the verbiage here for the podcast. If you go to alcoholtreatment.n as in November, I A A A, that's A as in alcohol or alpha, dot NIH dot gov. There is a locator there, and you can find all sorts of things to assist you through achieving sobriety. Christina, thank you for being on the couch tonight.
Oh, thank you for having me. It was nice to be here.
Say brain love.
Brain love.